Good morning, everyone, and welcome to hour number two of the WSVA Home Show. As we take your calls, questions, and comments, and answer your questions about issues relating to your home inside and out, Ken Patterson is with us today. We've got two special guests in the studio with us this hour to take your calls and questions about the housing market here in the Valley. And Ken will introduce them in just a moment after I tell you that our program is brought to you in part by Planters Bank, your financial partner for life. Get all the details about free checking, checking with interest, and free gifts at PlantersBank.net. I'm buying Coldwell Banker, Funkhauser Realtors. For the latest information on today's real estate market, go online to cbfunkhauser.com or call 434-2400. Buy Shenandoah Paint in Harrisonburg, now featuring all new Aura Paint from Benjamin Moore. See just what's so incredible about this amazing new interior paint at Shenandoah Paint, 50 Carlton Street in Harrisonburg. Buy Excel Arts Promotions, the one-stop advertising shop. If you've got advertising questions, they've got advertising answers. At Excel Arts, give them a call at 879-2749. That's 879-2749. And Weaver's Flooring America. Ever heard of carpet that comes with a 15-year stain-free warranty and no exclusions? They've got it at Weaver's Flooring America, the area's ultimate flooring store on South Main Street in Harrisonburg. Ken, who's with us this hour?
Yeah, well, welcome back to all of our listeners out there. In the second hour, we have with us Kemper Funkhauser and Scott Rogers of Coldwell Banker Funkhauser, based here in Harrisonburg. Welcome to the show, gentlemen.
Good morning, Ken. Thank you.
Yeah, we're glad you're here. We're going to pick your brain in a minute. When we opened the show in the first hour, we told our listeners we'd be talking a little more about real estate. Nationwide, we are in an unusual market. We see the trend down in so many parts of the country. Housing starts off. We see home sales staying on the market a little longer than what people may prefer. But we are in a unique situation here in the Shenandoah Valley. Our market does not have the same face on it that the average market across the country does. And that's why I said in the opening hour that we wanted to talk a little bit about real estate. And you guys are here as experts, and we're going to let you answer some calls to our listeners or for our listeners. And our phone lines are open if you'd like to give us a call. They're prepared to do that. And if you have other questions regarding home improvement, purchasing new homes, or putting on additions, we'll be glad to do the best we can to answer those. And we've got a few questions coming up from the mailbag as well. So again, Kemper, Scott, we're glad to have you here. I'm going to open this segment of the show, though, with a question Jim and I talked about in the last hour, and that has to do with a trend away from or towards garages. And I think you all heard a little bit of our conversation on that, but you see what's really going on throughout the central Shenandoah Valley market. And so, Kemper, you want to talk a little about that, whether we're seeing garages disappear from the marketplace? Are they still part of what homeowners are looking for?
They definitely still are part of something that homeowners are looking for. You know, we get a lot of people coming in from outside the area, and that brings in different traits of what they're looking for in a home. One thing that we have in our area is sometimes harsh winters, and you can't get over the fact that people don't like to take snow off of their car when they get up in the morning. Speaking more to what you talked about in the first hour about a storage, you know, that the garages are something that people want to use for storage. They are either going to put their car in there to prevent the winter effects, or they're going to be in there putting storage because
they want to get out of the living room and the bedrooms.
Exactly. Homes aren't built necessarily today for large storage areas. And the fallback is the garage, and that's what we're seeing.
On starter homes, though, this was an item I think that Jim had discussed. On starter homes, on lower-end homes, we're seeing lot sizes perhaps a little smaller. Those homes are a little smaller. Price point is what's driving that. We are seeing a reduction perhaps in garages at that level. You all agree?
Yeah, I definitely do. I think the price point is a big part of that. You know, we see lower price range homes without garages, and there's a reason for that, and you would be able to answer that from the construction standpoint. But once we get up towards, you know, even the $500,000 homes, and that's really what's happening in this market, believe it or not, a lot of $500,000 homes, you pretty much have to have a garage on that house to sell it. It's not going to sell without a garage.
One other point to make, taking a look at the changes over time. Looking at sales in the last 12 months of all homes in Harrisonburg and Rockingham County, if we divide it out by homes built since 1990, 72% of those homes had garages of some sort, one car, two car, three car. And if we look backwards 20 years before that, 1970 to 1990, only 38% of those homes had garages. So we've definitely seen a trend as far as time has gone forward. We've seen double the garages being put onto homes.
Let's talk a little bit about our market because we are in a very unique market, and the three of us are involved in real estate in this region, and we see it and we understand that perhaps more than the average person. There is a degree of fear, I think, that many have today because they're not seeing this rapid movement of real estate. And I refer to that in the sense that they have in the last 3 years where properties were selling before you could put a sign in the front yard. Properties were selling with competitive bids. You'd list it at $300,000 and you'd have three, four, or five bids bidding that price up. We are in a different world today. But based on everything that I see, and I want you all to talk a little bit about some local numbers, based on everything I see, we have simply gone back to a normal Shenandoah Valley market. Kemper, you've got some information I think it would be important to share with those out there that are thinking about selling. And we're going to talk about the buyer side as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've definitely been in a boom the past few years. There's no doubt about that. No one's going to disagree with that. When we look at really where do we compare 2007 to it, and that's really 2003. We look at the number of transactions in our market, and it's very similar to 2003. But the biggest difference is the average price of home. It's jumped nearly 40% in our local market since 2003. So we're seeing great appreciation in our market, and that's a very good sign for homeowners.
Well, when we go back to 2003, because as a builder, having been in this industry for about 37 years, I've seen a lot of ups and downs. And for me, this bubble that we have seen in commercial especially, residential especially, in these last few years has been just that. It's almost been artificial. It has been truly a seller's market. Whether you're selling an existing home or whether you're building and selling, it's been truly a seller's market. We are at a market point today where there's opportunity for some negotiation. There's opportunity to actually think about your purchase as a buyer before you need to sign that contract. You're not having to competitively bid these prices up. So for people who are alarmed by this bubble, if you will, that has gone away, should they be?
No, I don't think that they should. I think there's many positive highlights in the market right now. And Scott has some information about really what the true facts are out there about supply and demand in our market. Scott, do you want to comment on that?
Yeah, see what you have here.
Sure, certainly. One thing that's important to note even in our current market is that there are drastic differences by price range, looking at the different price ranges of homes. For example, dividing it between 200 and less, 200 to 350 and 350,000 and above, there are some drastic differences as far as the relationship between supply and demand. 200 and below, for example, there are 6 months of supply available right now. So a buyer looking at homes or a seller selling a home in that price range should know that, you know, there's about an average amount of inventory available to choose from. So it's a pretty much level market. Whereas if you look at the $350,000 and up price range, there are 22 months of supply. So whereas 9 homes on average are selling a month in that price range, there are 199 available. Obviously, a very different picture.
Yeah, but it's a great opportunity if you're a buyer when you look at the available models or resales that are out there, and opportunity to negotiate a little bit.
Correct, especially in that higher price range with the options that are out there. You have a lot higher likelihood of finding a home that suits you very well, and you have a lot of room to negotiate, hopefully, depending on the property.
And again, that first number, though, at around 200,000, we truly have gone back to a standard market of about 6 months.
Correct. 6 months of supplies considered normal. Over the last few years, we've had considerably less supply, and sellers have had a significant advantage even in that price range.
And it would appear if there are folks who are having difficulty at this particular time, it's the folks who have been involved in recent transactions. And that is, if you've been holding onto a property here in the Shenandoah Valley for the last 10 to 15 years, you've probably done exceptionally well and you've built up a tremendous amount of equity in that home. And if you're looking to buy, you would probably be in a good situation. If you're sitting with one of those homes that you kind of bought at the top of the bubble and now turning around and, you know, had anticipated, well, if everything had just kept going like I had hoped it was going to continue, you know, that extra 10 or 20% I was going to get out of that home, you may not realize that today. Has it slowed down a little bit, the pace of the market? Do you see as many people turning over properties, or are we slowing down to that pace that Ken was talking about that may be a little more traditional for the areas here in the Valley?
The pace has returned somewhat to normal, but I would like to speak to a trend in buyer impressions of real estate that I think have shifted. If you back up 5 years ago, most people knew that if you were to buy a home, you should plan to be there for 5 to 7 years or longer in order to be able to sell it and make some money on it. And that buyer mentality, I think, has unfortunately shifted a lot over the last few years, where people think that they can sell it 6, 12, 18 months later and walk away with $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, which for the last few years, in many cases, that was possible. But to the extent that people are within that mentality and not realizing that ultimately real estate ought to be and should be a longer-term investment, you know, if they're in that mentality of a short-term return, that's just not a normal expectation to have.
Right. And was that people who were actually buying these as homes, or were they buying them as investments? Because I think that's one area that we looked at with this real, and probably not so much here in the Shenandoah Valley, but when you look at places where the really hot real estate markets are,
well,
Northern Virginia,
like
San Francisco,
yeah.
New York, where you have some of these astronomical numbers, it was not unusual for people to come in and pick up handfuls of properties and try to turn them over very quickly.
Yeah, I think you hit it right on the head, and I think that's the biggest difference in our market right now, in 2007 versus 2004, 2005, and 2006. 2006, you know, we said that the number of transactions now is very similar to 2003. Number of transactions this year compared to last year is off by about 18%. But if you consider the amount of investors in the market over the past 3 years, it's enormous. You know, I'm not going to venture a guess at how many investors there were, but I will tell you a large portion of my personal business was investors that were coming in speculating what's going to happen with the college market. We live in a college town, which is very good for our economy. But what we're seeing right now is those investors aren't there. They're not there right. buying as they were the past 3 years.
Well, you know, and that's one element when you see all these stories about home foreclosures. And I think a lot of people equate home foreclosure with someone losing their home. And in some cases, it's not people actually losing their home or their residence. It's an investment that went bad, simply the same way it did if you've been holding bank stocks for the last 30 to 90 days or something, as they've taken a tremendous hit. Are those people kind of pushing back a little bit away from the market and not trying to turn it over, Scott, as quickly as they had been before with that expectation of being able to do it in 12 to 18 months?
Right. For the investors involved in the market, it certainly required an ability to have a short-term return. I mean, they saw in some subdivisions up in Northern Virginia up to 40% of contracts that were going on those new homes were by people who never intended to live in them, never intended to close on them. They were selling the contracts prior to closing. Thankfully, and that led to some unhealthy market conditions up in Northern Virginia. Thankfully, we haven't seen a tremendous amount of that down here, though we certainly have had, as Kemper mentioned, an increase in the number of investors in our market.
I think our market's too conservative, including in the lending industry, and that's one reason we're in a unique situation compared to the averages in the rest of the country.
We'll pick up on that, but let me go to the phone lines right now. WSVA, good morning. You're on the radio.
Yeah, hi, Jen.
Hi there.
Hi. I just have a quick comment about the housing market, and then I have a question for your guest, if I can still ask about house stuff.
Sure, go ahead.
As far as the housing market nationwide, I recently saw Susie Orman. She's one of these money management gurus on a talk show. Mm-hmm. And she was basically saying that the housing market up in Seattle and primarily out in California are the hardest hit areas, that people are really going overboard as far as their fear of the housing market going down, you know, as far as the majority of the country. So I just wanted to add that little tidbit. The question I have has to do with exterior walls and insulation and house wrap. And if your guests could explain the principle or purpose of house wrap and how does that prevent or contribute to mold on interior walls with drywall? Because I have a relative whose home is just plagued with this mold on drywall, and the house is not insulated properly, the exterior walls. Mm-hmm. But also I'd like to know about house wrap. Right. And I'll hang up and listen.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Ken, first, give us the layman's definition of what a house wrap is.
Well, it's a membrane that people will typically see. It may have a lumberyard logo or something on it occasionally, but it's typically a membrane that goes around the perimeter. It's like putting a bag on the outside of your structure, your walls. Mm-hmm. And the intent of that is it is a breathable material. I should explain that, too, which means that it protects, it prevents moisture from coming in, but it's designed to allow any moisture that's on the inside to escape and to go out. So it is not designed to trap moisture. There are products out there that people use in lieu of a designed house wrap that do not breathe, and that can create some issues. Many years ago, it was not uncommon to use an oil-saturated or an asphalt-saturated felt-type material, which is not designed to breathe like this does. Anyway, so house wrap is basically an envelope around the exterior of the home.
And then
it's designed to do those two things.
And then whatever the finish is, whether it's, we were talking about siding or other things in the previous hour, that's been put on top of that?
That'll go over it. Whether you have brick, whether you have vinyl siding, whether you're doing wood siding, all of those products go over the top of that. So it's a barrier.
Right. Now, was this utilized in place of insulation or as an additive to insulation?
It has no real insulating values. It's really designed as a protective barrier.
Okay.
And again, it's a two-way street. It allows moisture out but prevents moisture from getting in. And I certainly encourage anyone that's building or remodeling, even if you're remodeling and adding a wall somewhere, put it on because you're doing yourself there is some benefit. You're doing yourself a favor. In high winds, it helps seal that home. It keeps some of the wind and airflow from moving in between whatever your substrate is, whether it's plywood, OSB, or whatever. The problem that the caller talks about here with mold and mildew, unfortunately, is not uncommon in homes across the country. And what creates that is moisture. And moisture can either be from a leaky roof, a leaky pipe. It could be condensation. Things that are not properly insulated, especially pipes, are going to have a tendency to create condensation between our 20-degree outside temperature and 72 degrees inside temperature when you're heating that. So I think she's going to have to take a hard look at first the source of the problem. And it could be just lack of insulation, but again, it could be those other items. Roof leak or leaks around windows or doors that are creating that difference in temperature that creates this moisture, or just a simple roof leak. And without asking more questions, that's as much as I could say, is try and find what the source of the problem is first before you start looking at just insulation. The obvious would be signs of a roof leak on the ceiling, on the walls, or moisture streams from dried up water around windows or doors. And then you've got to look at condensation issues.
Right. And this is something you wouldn't attack with your air quality or something. You'd have to look at something physical.
Yeah, I think initially with what I'm hearing that there would be most likely some physical signs, but there has to be moisture present for this to be generated on the inside.
All right.
And they may not always see the moisture. It could be bleeding in behind the sheetrock if there's a roof leak again or a pipe that's leaking or something like that.
Would there be a way you could tell that without bringing somebody in?
No. At that point, I think they need to bring a professional in and take a good look at it.
All right. Let me go back to the phones. WSVA, good morning. You're on the radio. Okay, maybe not. WSVA, good morning. You're on the air.
Yes, I'm making a call in reference to a question the lady had in the first hour. There's a product she was inquiring about as far as being able to take ceramic tile that's outside and be able to dull the finish to be able to, that it wouldn't be not would not be slip
right.
slippery.
Yeah.
There's a product made by a company called Slip Guard Systems. It's a spray-on product that will etch ceramic and porcelain tile. It will not hurt the grout. Will not hurt your shrubs. And if she goes to one of your full-service floor covering stores, they should be able to help her with that.
Okay, and this is something that a homeowner, or do you have to have a contractor apply that?
Either way.
But it's a user-friendly product.
User-friendly product, yes, sir.
Well, that's good to know. I appreciate the heads up on that. I hope the caller earlier is still listening.
All righty.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Phone lines are open. You're listening to the WSVA Home Show. We're going to take a break here at the bottom of the hour. We'll come back with more of your calls, questions, and comments. Joining us in studio this hour, we're pleased to have with us Kemper Funkhauser and Scott Rogers. They are with Coldwell Banker, Funkhauser Realtors. And for the latest information on today's real estate market, go online to cbfunkhauser.com or give them a call at 434-2400. We will talk more about our local housing market coming up in just minutes right here on WSVA.
You're listening to Good Days with Jim Britt on News Radio 550 WSVA.
Welcome back to Midday on WSVA. This is our WSVA home show for the month of November. And we have with us in studio Kemper Funkhauser and Scott Rogers. They are with Coldwell Banker, Funkhauser Realtors. I wanted to let Kemper just address one thing we just heard. Kemper, we're hearing from ABC that the price of homes gone down 5%, which I believe is the biggest drop since, was those the S&P figures?
Actually, there's an article in the paper today from the S&P, but National Association of Realtors did do their monthly report this morning at 10 o'clock. It came out. And from a national standpoint, it doesn't look good, but locally, we're very, very different. And the one thing we tell everybody is all real estate really is local.
Mm-hmm.
A national real estate forecast is as useful as a national weather forecast. If they say the national weather is going to be an average of 50 degrees, that really doesn't have much effect on you. We have to look at things locally. One stat I will share with you that came out this morning at 10 o'clock was that national home sales in October were down almost 21%. Well, during that same time here locally, we were up 18%. So there's a big difference between the national scene and the local scene. And I encourage everybody to keep that in mind as they read articles in the paper, see things on TV or on the radio.
It's a 39-40% trend difference between the national averages and what we see here in the Shenandoah Valley.
It is, and a lot of it is because the large metropolitan areas are being hit. Some are doing very well. Some are up, but
others drag that
down.
Percentage down considerably. Northern Virginia, we know, is an example of that.
Exactly.
Let me go to the phones. Hi, WSVA, you're on the radio.
Jim, gentlemen, good morning. Hey,
good morning. How are you?
Good, thanks. I'm going to hold the phone away from my head just in case a lightning bolt hits it in a minute. Well, I got to tell you, gentlemen, I think this show is the best 2 hours of radio you got on every month, Jim.
Well, the credit goes to Ken.
I know. That's why
thank
I'm holding
you.
The phone away from my head.
Maybe I should step outside the studio. I'm a little concerned now, but thank you.
You're welcome. Look, you know, Jim, I had assumed you were going to comment on the ABC News newscast, but so I'm going to phrase the question to Kemper and his peer so it has more of a local tone to it. Locally, I've noticed that some friends of mine who live in Belmont, for instance, are having a hard time selling their houses because there are so many houses in Belmont and Lakewood for sale presently. So I'm assuming that markets, I mean, the market for those type of homes have gone down, whereas if you get out into the unincorporated areas of the county, houses which, you know, have an acre or two or 5 acres of land that go with it, those seem to be selling faster. Do you guys have any indication that that is, in fact, the trend, that homes in communities are selling much slower and, you know, homes?
And communities you're referring to would be platted subdivisions as opposed to acreage?
Okay, that would be fine, Ken.
Well, let's ask the professionals. Gentlemen?
That's certainly an interesting question, one I would love to research and see what the answer is. I will tell you one thing. Looking at historical sales trends measured by how many closings there are per month, we haven't actually seen a difference in the amount of demand or the amount of people that are actually buying homes. What perhaps creates the context that you're hearing about from your friends is that more people are trying to sell their homes. Obviously, they're going to think that it's taking longer or think that they're not being able to be successful selling their home, but that's not actually a reflection in our current market of less people buying them. It's just that more people are trying to sell them.
Right. Well, I just have taken notice because, you know, a friend or two of mine at church is, they've had their homes on the market in Battlefield. That's what I was speaking of, Battlefield, for over a year. And I said, well, the reason why your house hasn't sold is obviously because you're asking too much for it, given the nature of the market we're in. But, you know, when you go into places like Battlefield or Lakewood, there are numbers of homes for sale in there that seem to be, I mean, obviously it's because it's more densely populated, but it just seems like there's a lot of homes for sale in those types of housing developments.
You're absolutely correct. And I have some of these conversations with some of my seller clients each month. And, you know, the question, why didn't my home sell this month? And looking at just the pure numbers of it, over the last several months, an average of 9 homes sold per month. And in the 350 and up price range, which would apply to most of the homes in Battlefield and Lakewood and most of the subdivisions around there. That's compared to about 200 that are available. So every month, about 9 or maybe 10 buyers put a contract on a home and then close on it a month or two later, which means 190 are not sold that month. So, yes, it's definitely taking longer in some of those subdivisions, but mainly it's just the price range and the number of people that are trying to sell right now.
Right. So, you know, again, following up on the ABC story, are homes in our area, are they truly depreciating in value as ABC, you know, said nationally they were? Or are home values pretty steady here because we live in a desirable area and the market, you know, is being able to sustain itself?
Yeah, I think you're exactly right in your last comment. You know, we live in we're very fortunate to live in the Shenandoah Valley, a very conservative area, financially speaking. But it's also a college town. I think if you look across the trend across the nation, college towns similar to ours are somewhat isolated from what we're seeing on the national trends. And so we're very fortunate to have that. We're seeing a lot of a growth in our economy, a diversified economy, which really helps us out, helps homeowners when they go to sell. But there's a lot of things to look at for the homeowner. And that is, you know, positioning your home in today's market. And that's something that we as realtors have to deal with on a daily basis, is the expectations of sellers. You know, the past 3 years, we put a house on the market, and with the number of days, we would receive 1, 2, 3, 4 offers on that, and it was very easy for sellers. This market is different, where we are seeing more homes on the market, days on market has increased. So I would encourage anybody who's looking to sell their home or is currently have their home on their market is to have a serious conversation with your realtor about how your home is positioned against other homes in your neighborhood, other homes that are in similar price range. You know, pricing is a big part of it, but it's only one part. You have to look at property condition and many other factors. So I would encourage people to do that.
You know, thanks very much, Scott. You know, Jim, I would encourage you to ask Ken to do this show. God, I don't believe I'm going to say this. And I was going to laugh because I saw Cal just back into an electric fence just now. And he kind of jumped. But so that was funny to me. But,
I think it's a message there.
Yeah. Is there some type of symbolism there you're trying to infer, Dave?
Well, I'm not bumping into an electric fence as I'm in my car. But, you know, you should consider this being one of your every 2 week shows, Jim. Because I'm learning a lot, not just about stuff I'd like to learn about in the house, but stuff that I can file away and use later.
Well, we would always consider that, Dave, particularly when the suggestions emanate from you.
Well, never mind. Thank you. Thank you,
thanks,
gentlemen.
Dave. Thanks for calling. Good to hear from you.
We appreciate it.
Let me add one thing to what the caller commented on. In the beginning, he commented a little bit about the difference in a home that's out there on a piece of land versus a home in a neighborhood. And I talked a little about expectations of sellers. But we also have a difference in expectations of buyers coming in this market as well. We work with a lot of people that are relocating into the area. They think the Shenandoah Valley, I'm going to buy a home on 5 acres of land.
Right. Top of a hill.
Or $105,000.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Top
yeah.
of a hill.
I'm
going to
have horses, cattle, and elephants.
Right, exactly. And that's just not the reality here in this market. So we have to deal with expectations of buyers as well.
All right, let me go back to the phones. Hi, you're on WSVA.
Is that me?
Yes, sir, that is you.
Well, the earlier caller set up a lot of the questions. I'm not quite so inclined to just dismiss things as being, there's not other things that can't be done. I've worked in real estate in the 80s in the Seattle area, and I don't see a lot of the techniques that we utilized back in that time period being utilized now.
Are you talking about marketing tools? I'm sorry, marketing-wise?
No, I don't even see efforts being made on seeing if loans are assumable. We're getting constant reports from national groups going in tremendous numbers of debt, but yet I don't know of any realtor that picks up the phone and calls a loan account and sees if that particular lender would consider letting a loan that was a 5%er or 5.25% 2 years ago go on an assumable loan. I can barely find on my searches two or three houses that are even assumable by loan. Now, people are trying lease option of purchases. They're trying other things, but it seems like we have a whole cadre of agents out there that don't have the techniques and understanding of what could be done. Do you even talk about the notion of a daisy chain where you're talking with a realtor in Florida and say, well, the guy at the top end of the purchase cycle, and for your audience, that would be three or four houses in line all held up by the way of one sale not popping. Do you have realtors that are calling and talking to other agents and saying, hey, you know, if your guy at the top will do this, we can daisy chain it all the way down? I don't even hear about people talking about doing equity trades. I mean, it's just like it's all cut and dry, and some of the skills of the past are not even being utilized.
Well, let me let the gentleman respond. Gentlemen?
So an excellent series of questions there. On the assumable loans, I think one important thing to recognize is that lenders are not short-sighted. Over the last few years, the majority of loans have not been assumable, mainly because of the low rates that were being offered. The extremely low fixed rates, it's not in a lender's best interest to make that assumable. Having looked at most of the closings that I've been to over the last three years, you know, for example, almost all of them that were fixed rate were not assumable. Many that were adjustable rates after a short period of time were. So while, yes, assuming a loan is sometimes a great way to get good financing, it's not possible in most cases these days because lenders aren't allowing it from the onset of when that note is being written. Certainly, you know, a good thought, though.
Now, some older properties that have not been refinanced, you may have an original mortgage from 10, 12, 15 years ago. You're more apt to find that clause in there where it could be assumed. And as the caller suggests, that could be a bargain and a way to make a quick transfer.
However, if you look at average interest rates during that time period, 10 or 12 years ago,
it's going to be higher than today.
Right. No one would want to assume one of those loans because even today, interest rates are at historic lows. I mean, they're still tremendously low, being under 7% for average 30-year fixed rates. You know, we still have tremendous interest rates. So assumable loans, while certainly an interesting thing to explore, they're not available on most of the lower rates, and you still can get some great rates even going out there on your own.
Is the real estate community communicating, as the caller suggests, between agents as you're trying to put together? And we all are familiar with what he's talking about, where one sale, one closing may hold up two or three others in a series as people are buying up or moving or changing locations. Is there an online communication or telephone communication that keeps all these people linked together to try and make these things happen?
Now more than ever. I'd say we, in the past, this was something we were talking about on the break, is just the changing dynamic in buying and selling a home simultaneous, which often creates a daisy chain that the caller was speaking of, where you have three or four homes that are connected, the first one having, you know, needing to happen and then on from there. And that is certainly where communication is important, you know, more than ever, as far as realtor to realtor, agent to agent there. there, and recognizing the fact that there may be some leverage that can be used in one of the transactions prior up the line to make the whole thing work. So it's absolutely, that communication is important, and hopefully we're, you know, seeing that from most agents in this area.
Now, you've got a mailbag question that alludes to that.
Yeah, it really does. We talked about this just a little earlier, at least off the air. This is from Susan in Harrisonburg. And Susan writes that we need advice. My husband just got a promotion, which is nice, but it means we have to move out of the state by spring. That also means we have to sell our house fast. We just talked about the number of months or days on the market. So she said it's an older home. It's in pretty good shape, but like most older houses, it could use a lot of minor repairs. She's not alluding to anything major here. She said what we want to know is this. With the housing market the way it is, should we spend the money to do the repairs or put a lower price on the house to sell it quickly? And she concludes that, I hope we don't have to do both. So we've talked a little bit about that. What can we offer to Susan and Harrisonburg here?
I think two issues at hand there. One is buying and selling simultaneously, which is perhaps a peripheral issue. And then the second one is the value of improvements. The National Association of Home Builders actually puts out a report every year comparing the amount of money invested in a variety of home improvement projects and then the amount of money that is recouped when selling the home. The bad news for those people who are spending a lot of that money in hopes of getting even more money out of it is that in all of the examples that the National Association of Home Builders uses, the return is less than 100%. So the thought is that you shouldn't just be doing it if you're going to be selling your home shortly thereafter. You better be doing it because you're going to get some interim enjoyment out of the property because you have improved it in some way. The return varied from 70 to 95% as far as the amount of financial return relative to the amount invested. So
you spend $1,000, you're likely to get $750 of that back when you go to sell.
And you better hope that you have $250 or more of enjoyment of it before you sell.
Well, you know, do it before you list the house. What can I say? But you're right. There, you know, it's not unlike building new or remodeling that frequently we put money in our homes, and I've cautioned people about this over the decades. It's your money. If it's something you want, put it in because you enjoy it. Don't always worry about a resale value for that, because many products we put in, tile is an example, ceramic tile, special wall coverings, fabrics that you may have in draperies and things, suit our taste, our lifestyle, the way we live in our homes. But we may go spend $5,000 to do this and say, oh, I'll get that back when I go to sell the house. And the buyer comes along and says, man, your colors and your choices are hideous. I'd buy this thing if it weren't for those colors. And it's a real negative to them. So I think it's important that people put money in their home because they enjoy it. It's something that makes them happy. They see, they get value for the money they're investing. And in that mix, if there are things you can do that make your home more marketable, then that's wise to couple it together.
Yeah, there's definitely some things that people can do to make their home more marketable, and I would encourage anybody who's looking to sell their home right now to talk with a realtor, get a good understanding of what's out there in the market, what is their competition if their home goes on the market. And there's many things that you need to do prior to putting your home on the market. Maybe a good idea to have a home inspection done, and because at some point the buyer is probably going to ask for a home inspection, and it'd be better for you to know that before you put your home on the market, possibly get some things repaired, and then look at where does the price point need to be. If your home is in better condition than the other ones that are currently out there and priced just as well or not better, then you're setting yourself up for a pretty good chance of a quick sell.
You know, it sounds like from Susan's comment here, there's nothing major, for example. If you're talking about a little cleaning, cosmetic work, some paint, some caulking, cleaning the carpets, that's inexpensive. Now, if you've got a roof issue, you've got a problem while you live there anyway, and you better take care of it.
That's exactly right.
And along with what Kemper said there, I think one important thing is to look at what the other homes have that your home would be competing against. If we're talking about a four-bedroom, 2,000-square-foot, you know, 1930 to 1950 home, and all of the other homes on the market right now have two full baths, and yours has one full bath and an easy way to add another full bath, you know, you either need to not expect to get as much as those other homes are able to obtain on the market, or you need to possibly invest in putting a second bath in there, since most buyers will expect that looking at all of the others.
Well, you know, and it's interesting, with so much fluctuation in this market, and as you talk about so many homes being out there, I see a lot of folks who put the sign out and say for sale by owner. And I think one of the reasons that folks do that every once in a while isn't necessarily to keep you folks out and to keep, you know, to keep your cut. they don't really want sometimes to get that honest appraisal of what their home is worth, or they're not sure they want to sell their home, because I've seen in some circumstances that those for sale by owner signs come up, they go down, they come up, they go down. So they're not real sure about it, but it's like anything else. You know, we're never paid as much as we think we're worth, and our home is always probably worth more in our minds than it may be in some cases in the market. Or you may be surprised, as you said, if you go out and you get a third person to honestly evaluate your home and to see what the value is. Is that something folks should think more and more about? I can think of one reason off the top, and that is to make sure that your insurance coverage is where it needs to be if you have a fire or if you have some type of catastrophe. There are a lot of folks whose homes and their insurance levels are at one place, and now your home is worth a lot more money than it was 10 years ago.
Yeah, I think it's absolutely a good idea, especially over time, to just have an idea of what it's worth. That one interesting thing to relate this to some earlier conversations, you look at the situations people are getting into financially with being overcommitted, and then they need to sell and they owe more than they... One way that they've gotten into that is because they have gone to a lender to get a home equity line of credit. They've had an idea in their mind of what their house is worth. They've told the lender, well, this is what we need to, you know, appraise this thing for to make it work. The lender makes it work, and then a year later when they have to leave the area because of a job, they're in an awful situation. So getting an objective, you know, if you have a relationship with a realtor such that you can over time every year, every 2 years, talk to them and get it just an independent analysis of what your home is worth relative to what other properties are selling for in and around your home. That's incredibly valuable information to have for insurance purposes, for, you know, considering a home equity line of credit, for any number of reasons.
We also need to draw a clear clarification there that appraisal, or I shouldn't say appraisal, but the market value by a realtor is not an appraisal. Mm-hmm. If you truly want an appraisal done on your property, you need to talk to a certified appraiser. A realtor is going to come from the perspective of what can your home possibly be sold for on the market today.
And that, to me, would be eminently more valuable, because there's all sorts of things at the website. You know, you enter this stuff, you enter that, and they're supposedly going to tell you how much your home is worth.
Right.
Well, they have no more idea sitting in an office somewhere in Kansas City of what your home is worth in this market, then I guess you can call and ask your dog or something along that particular line. You know, that to me would seem to be the more valuable, because, you know, anybody knows anything, whatever you've got that you're trying to sell, it's only worth what somebody's willing to pay for.
That's exactly.
That's the bottom line. No matter what your price tag is, what you can get for it is what it's worth.
All right, let me try to sneak in one more quick call. Hi, you're on the radio.
Hi, is that me?
Yes, sir.
I have a question. The change of assessment notices went out this week.
Yes, sir.
If I can get that word assessment out, I'd be better, wouldn't it?
You're doing well.
The land part of it went up by 25%, and the building part went down by a minor amount, 3-4%. Is that typical?
Now, where do you live, sir?
I live in Harrisonburg.
You live in the city?
Yep.
Well, I'm not part of the reassessment. I'm going to let the real estate guys answer that. But I will tell you, as a builder, one thing I've noticed as I buy properties is that land has skyrocketed. It's like many other products. It's supply and demand.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, there's still building supplies that are being produced out there, but there's no more land being produced.
Yep.
So that drives the price of the land. Location, the infrastructure, sewer, water, streets. Building prices are a bit more stable today than they have been in the last few years as a whole. Not specifically, but as a whole. I'm going to let Scott talk to that
a
little bit.
It's a very interesting question, especially because one of my clients emailed me about this earlier this week. Certainly, as Ken identifies, land values are almost always just going to go up over time. But noticing that the value of the home itself went down, or the structure itself went down, one of my clients had a similar situation happen, and I'm curious. I have not yet heard back from the city as far as what some of those metrics are that they are using. But essentially, you know, the bottom line is either one of the components of the structures was changed in their records. In other words, they thought you had three bedrooms and realized you had two. Or the value that they're attaching to some of the components of that home have changed. So I suspect, hearing what you have experienced and what one of my clients experienced, that some adjustments were made in the numbers that the city is using. And I hope to get some of that information, or maybe we'll be able to make that more available.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. We appreciate your call. We appreciate all your telephone calls. Don't forget, we bring you the WSVA Home Show monthly, a chance for you to ask questions about your home inside and out. Ken Patterson has joined us today. We also want to thank our guests this hour, Kemper Funkhauser and Scott Rogers, joining us from Coldwell Banker, Funkhauser Realtors. Gentlemen, thank you. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
And we also appreciate Rick Peters of Shenandoah Paint joining us in our previous hour. Our program is brought to you in part by Excel Arts Promotions, by Weaver Floor Covering America, also Planners Bank, your financial partner for life, Coldwell Banker, Funkhauser Realtors, and Shenandoah Paint in Harrisonburg. 3 minutes now before the hour of 12 o'clock. Ken, we will see you in a couple of weeks on Issues and Growth.
Look forward to it.
Thank you.
As always.